Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Hi, welcome to the broadcast. Thanks so much for tuning in again here on Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem, and I always appreciate the opportunity to get together with you. Ted Ross at the controls. Ted?
I'm sorry, what?
Well, yeah, sure. Yeah, we're
just setting you up here.
We're going to talk a little bit about ADHD and other neurobiological diagnoses. So, And nothing that you can confirm that you have at this point.
No, when I was young, my mom did take me into the doctor. And as I got older, looking back, I think it was probably to see if I had that. This was in the late 70s, before it was all diagnosed, I think. And they said that I didn't have anything, but I remember being at the doctor going, "I feel fine. Why are we here? Let's go.
Oh, we got the squirrel."
Yeah, right.
Well, we're going to talk a little about that today, and we have a special guest who's come back to the studio again. Carissa's at the phones, and would love to have you join the conversation, too. You can call us anytime at 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. And just a quick reminder again, too, that we're counting down just another day, actually just 2 days before we'll do the drawing for the Pastor Appreciation, the week-long getaway, thanks to Sunscape's retreat. And I just want to encourage you, if you've not yet nominated your pastor, that you would do that, because it's a great opportunity. They can either go to their retreat center just outside of Colorado Springs, up in the mountains there, looking over Pikes Peak, or there's, I think, in rural Tennessee, another retreat center there. I mean, just a great opportunity for pastor and spouse to get away and really renew and recharge for a week. So, and we'd love to always hear the comments, too, about what you appreciate about your pastor and your church. So go to myfaithradio.com, and you can sign up for that. Today we'll do the drawing, I think, probably middle of the day or so on Friday. So you've still got a little bit of time, but I'd love to make sure that your pastor is nominated. And go to myfaithradio.com and take care of that.
So. Sign up there. We'll be saying trick or retreat that day. How about that?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I'll be over here. You go.
Retreat. Okay, sure. Yeah, it's, Mary's got a tough job to try and top, it's just Ted and I bantering the whole hour. It could be fun.
I'd love to listen to you
would
guys.
You? All right.
Go.
Mary Wangren is back in studio. We've visited with her on several occasions, and I always appreciate the opportunity to connect with her. Mary's a businesswoman, a wife, a support group leader, and advocates on behalf of families with children diagnosed with autism or other neurobiological diagnoses. And she's a dedicated volunteer at her church and in scouting, mother of two adult children, a 23-year-old son with a diagnosis of Asperger's syndrome, and then her daughter is 21, I think. And Mary has a degree in biology. She also has a degree in momology, which is probably more important for us, our discussion. But Mary, you got into learning about Asperger's, I guess, because your son. And was he diagnosed early on? I mean, he's what, 23 now, right?
I know. So, isn't that scary?
Yeah.
I think it is.
And by the way, we are going to talk a little bit about adults' diagnosis as well. But
absolutely, because as he's growing, we all are learning what happens when you have adults with ADD. Yeah. No, George was diagnosed very young. I shouldn't say young nowadays. They're getting diagnosed really young. But like in first and second grade, he was diagnosed with ADD with obsessive-compulsive disorder. It wasn't until he got into seventh grade that a social worker had said, "Mary, have you ever thought about George having Asperger's syndrome?" And I said, "Yes, let's do it. Let's get the diagnosis." And then that's when he was diagnosed. So considering his age, he was pretty much later than most kids get diagnosed for Asperger's.
Okay. Which the common term is autism, right?
Right. It's high-functioning autism.
Okay.
Are there
differences between autism and Asperger's syndrome?
There is. Okay. The difference, I would say, is there's a social aspect to both of them. They lack the social skills in both autism as well as Asperger's syndrome. But what happens is a lot of times in the autism, the kids are very delayed with speaking. Some of the communication factors, sometimes they don't even talk. The thing about the Asperger's piece is there they tend to be very rule-bound. They lack one of the most obvious signs is they don't always have really good eye connection. My son, when he speaks with you, when he meets an individual for the first time, he does not look at them. He thinks he does. He tries hard to do it. But it's not until he starts to get to really know and understand you that he really starts to look at you. Another feature is they're very rule-bound. They're very structured. They get into these schedules, and if anything tries to change the schedule, it kind of precipitates a meltdown or a really hard challenge. Sometimes when you want them to speed up, they go backwards. It's like they almost fight you by slowing down more. So.
And of course, kids get into routines pretty young, too. So, I mean, you would just think, well, maybe they're just they're strong-willed. I mean, if they're a two-year-old and sort of staying with their routines, that...
Absolutely. That's really funny that you'd say that. When kids are younger and they need that routine, it's like their internal self is really disorganized, so everything externally has to be organized and compartmentalized. Yeah. That's a really big thing for them, yes. And it's funny because when they're little, some of the things that I look back when George was a little boy and I start seeing some of the characteristics. He used to play with stuff for hours on end, just watching Thomas the Tank Engine. We had a pocket door, and he used to shove the engines underneath it. And then he would wait, and he was very patient, and then we'd have to pull it out, and then he'd push. I mean, hours. I mean, I thought, wow, this kid is really smart. Yeah. He's focused on such great things. And to find out that's not what it was. Yeah.
Well, I mean, but he could.
Oh, he is very smart.
He is very smart, though, right?
Which is
another thing, I guess, too. That it doesn't mean that there's that someone isn't smart or they don't have intellect.
No, a lot of these kids are very gifted. As a matter of fact, sometimes almost savant in areas of which they've chosen. It's amazing to think of the capabilities these children have. It's just given the opportunity, and I guess the best way to look at these kids is I would consider. A neurotypical, because I don't like to use the word normal, because what is normal? I'm normal. Everybody has to be measured against me. I doubt it. people out there are going, oh, my heavens. But if you take a neurotypical individual and consider them just a regular PC, and you take an individual who's diagnosed like with Asperger's or even anybody with an NBD, neurobiological diagnosis, if you look them at two different types of computers. You can't necessarily take the software from a PC and put it in an Apple computer. And that's kind of the difference between a neurotypical and a diagnosed individual. What's kind of funny is I've had individuals who have said, oh, Mary, you're wrong, because there is software that allows you to take the program from a PC and put it into an Apple. And I go, yes, and that's almost like when you talk about accommodations that people need that do have the Apple. The kids need to have accommodations.
We can talk more about that as we go along as well, because that is kind of a key element. I do want to maybe just to have you do some definitions to talk about neurobiological diagnosis. But before we do that, just a reminder, I do have some copies of a year or so ago, we visited with Dr. Daniel Amen when he had come out with a new book called Healing ADD, the breakthrough program that allows you to see and heal the seven types of ADD. And I've got some copies available, and they've been sitting on our shelves. I'd love to just put them in your hands if that's something that you think a resource would be helpful to you or someone that you know. You can certainly call and sign up for that. 877-93-FAITH is the phone number, 877-933-2484. And we'd love to interact with you, too. If you have some questions or just want to share a little bit about your story or your family experience as we talk neurobiological diagnosis, autism, Asperger's syndrome, ADHD, all those things. And Mary, what are we meaning when we talk about these neurobiological diagnoses? I mean, they're all sort of related, aren't they?
They all basically are related. It's basically anything that has been affected by the neurology of your brain. It's what basically happens, especially when you hear this about ADD, is that the neurons aren't basically communicating, the nerves aren't, and so you don't have as much reaction to things. That's why when you take and you give an individual a stimulant, it increases the blood flow, which increases the neurons and the dopamine transmitters to communicate. I know that sounds real maybe scientific in a way, but basically what happens is it gets the communication in your brain going. And with all the NBDs, it all has to do with that function going on in an individual's brain. Where I use the word diagnosis as opposed to being a specific type is the factor that if you take an individual like George, his primary diagnosis is Asperger's, but he shows characteristics of ADD as well as obsessive compulsive disorder. Again, I'm not a scientist. I don't have my master's or my PhD or any sort of I've done any research, but what I have seen and heard from the amount of people that I've dealt with is a lot of times you're not going to see a child with a pure diagnosis. A lot of times you see a child that even has a learning disability. They may have some ADD going on, or they may have something else going on. And so when it comes down to actually talking about these kids and helping them and helping adults that work with these kids as well as adults, it's just a matter of knowing if they have a diagnosis or not.
Which I would think probably brings up a challenge then in terms of maybe treatment plan or medication. Say, well, you know, you've got sort of characteristics of this. You know, we have a medication that can treat that, but it may not help with other things or maybe even exacerbate other parts.
You know, that's really a good comment because that is so true. There are so many different medications, and when parents first learn of their child's diagnosis, and even adults who just learn, if they are choosing to use a medication to help this individual, they have to go through a process of starting out. They usually try low dosages, and they increase it until the individual actually can feel a difference in terms of their attention and the way they can focus, getting things done. Even in some situations, if their temper, that's one thing they're finding out with adults is that some of the signs may not be the same as kids, but it's the focus factor. It's completing tasks. And it's also, I guess, looking at the way they control their anger. Mm. That sounds really crazy. But and somebody would say, well, I really focus well at work, or I focus really well at school. It's when I get outside that situation. And that's because these individuals have trained themselves to work so hard to remain focused and be successful that after hours, they're exhausted. I even see that at times. We choose medication in our family for my son, George, and we have found that when George is out of medication or chooses not to take it on a particular day, ooh-wee, that's not always good. But anyway, when he does that, he is like exhausted, going to bed like at 8 o'clock at night because he has worked so hard on the things that he needs to do that he's absolutely exhausted.
Interesting. Yeah. We're talking about well, neurobiological diagnosis and just getting some perspective on whether it's ADD, ADHD, autism, Asperger's, whatever it might be. We'd welcome you to join the conversation as well. We do have some copies of Dr. Daniel Amen's book we'd mentioned specifically about ADD, and you can certainly sign up for that. But if you'd love to just talk with Mary Wangren, who is Mary's a dedicated volunteer at her church and in scouting and mother of two children, and has studied this and lived it out in her home, and it's just this has become a passion for her, and she's an advocate on behalf of families with children diagnosed with autism or other neurobiological diagnoses, a support group leader, businesswoman joining us today. Love to take your questions, your comments. Join the conversation at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Or if it's more convenient, you could drop us a note. If you go to myfaithradio.com, you can click on the Connecting Faith show page, and then just there's an email link right there. You can just send us a note, and we'll take your question that way as well. Myfaithradio.com, click on Connecting Faith. More with Mary Wangren coming up in just a moment. Talk talking to families today, families that have children diagnosed with autism or other neurobiological diagnoses, and maybe that's something that you are experiencing in your family or have maybe as a young person or maybe even an adult with a diagnosis. Maybe you didn't even know you had the diagnosis until perhaps later in life. Mary Weingren's a businesswoman, a wife, support group leader, advocate on behalf of those families, and she has her son, a 23-year-old adult son, George, has a diagnosis of Asperger's syndrome and characteristics of ADD and OCD. And she has been very involved in her church and in scouting just to kind of bring this message forward. And, Mary, I know that, you know, you've been a support group leader. I'm sure that there are probably families that, we're thinking inviting people to call today, 877-93-FAITH, but it's maybe kind of a fearful thing to let people know sometimes that, you know, maybe your child has a diagnosis of some sort.
Absolutely. When parents, I believe this is what happened with me, and I hear this from other parents. When a child is diagnosed or an adult is diagnosed, you're like really excited. This is terrific. Now I know that it's not
this
parenting.
And not that,
yeah,
sure.
And a lot of people do blame parenting skills on a child's behavior, especially one with a diagnosis. But the thing that's really scary about it is that you don't want people to know, because no matter what, and I hate to say it, but there's such a stigma about kids that have diagnosis. And a lot of people are afraid to say anything because they feel like someone's going to judge their child before they even have an opportunity to get out of the starting gate. And it's kind of funny. My husband used to pull this when we went to school, when my son went to school. You know, it would be the first day, new teacher. And my husband one time said to me, Mary, let's not tell the teacher. Let's just see if she notices. Hello.
Yeah.
After 2 weeks, the honeymoon is over and everybody's crashing all over and you're getting the phone calls. So absolutely, parents sometimes are afraid, and I hate to say it, but there's not always a lot of support that's out there. In certain areas of our region, there are not. I mean, I know people will get in the car and drive an hour if they can find a support group. And then when they find the support group, is it a positive or a negative? That's really important, is to make sure that they are having a positive experience.
So a negative support group where there's – whether they're focusing on parenting or, I mean,
well, they're complaining about everybody,
oh,
you know,
okay.
Whoa, I shouldn't say that, but
no,
woe
yeah.
is me and nobody's
okay.
good to me. Yeah. Sometimes you need someone to say, you know what, it does happen, but this is what you can do to get over it. You know, it was my support group, to be honest, that would allowed me to get through holidays. I mean, we've got Halloween coming up.
Yeah.
And I know, you know, there's a lot of sugar going on. And it being a Friday, I always think that Halloween is intensified because the trick-or-treaters will maybe be out later because they don't have school the next day. And but the sugar does intensify it. But what happens before you even get out the door? The kids may have been getting excited at school about it. They get excited when they get home. They can't wait to trick-or-treat. Well, mom and dad have to get ready. Maybe there's other sibs. And there's a lot of tension just going on. And I found out that sometimes it's just good to let the kids, you know, sit down, watch some TV, play a game, and try to help them just kind of stay focused till you're ready to go trick-or-treating. Otherwise, it's constantly, can we go? Can we go?
Yeah.
Can we go?
Yeah. Hey, let's take some calls. We've got a full phone bank of calls, and we'll try and get you on as quickly as possible, get you queued up and ready to go. We'll start with Elsa, listening in Shakopee. Elsa, you're on with Mary Weingren. Go ahead.
Hi there. I have a 13-year-old who was diagnosed on the spectrum last spring, and she also has ADHD as well as dyslexia. And I've just noticed over the course of her growing up that her behavior is getting worse, which is getting more aggressive, which is one of the reasons why we sought out evaluation to figure out what was going on. But I'm really struggling right now because she sees a psychologist each week, but she's not aware of how she affects other people. And so we've been doing it for a year, and it's not really making any difference in how she acts and how we relate. And we're just really struggling with her level of aggression and her she's doing a lot of screaming and a lot of yelling at people and being verbally abusive. And so I'm not sure where to go to get some help for her as well as for us.
Yeah, and it was Elisa, not Elsa. Sorry, Elisa, thank you for your call. And do you need to ask her any more questions, Mary?
Lisa, just out of curiosity, is most of her aggression the yelling and the screaming?
Yeah, I mean, as she's gotten older, she does a lot of door slamming, like really aggressive door slamming, breaking the frame kind of door slamming. And, you know, we've had some issues with kicking holes in the wall.
I was just going to say, I totally identify. A couple of our doors still have holes in them because of the anger thing. Yeah, you're not the only one. It's kind of embarrassing, and you're just like, we have a heavy dog.
Yeah, no. sure.
When you have company, I totally get that. I totally identify with what you're saying. Again, I'm not a professional, and I don't have, I'm not in practice or anything like that. But what you're talking about, I totally identify. I have a 20-year-old daughter who's a junior out in West Virginia, and she too, going through when she was diagnosed, and she was diagnosed with ADD as well as anxiety. And I think that the biggest thing, and I'm sure your therapist has maybe shared that with you, is their volume gets increased when they, one, don't think they're being heard, and number two, when they themselves are really frustrated. And I'm so glad to hear, and I don't know, Lisa, if you're still on the line or not, I'm so glad to hear you are. Have you sought out any assistance yet from a therapist?
Well, I have the ability to talk with her therapist for half of the time that we go each week.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult because we spend so much money on her medical needs.
Oh, I hear you.
There's not a lot left to be able to do that. So we're looking at the Fraser Center right now and trying to figure out, you know, if there's somebody that can speak more specifically to her. And the other piece is, people don't really understand. I actually voice recorded her the other day because I don't think even her psychologist gets what I'm talking about.
Is her psychologist a specialist working with kids with ASD, the autism spectrum? I know
she's
that sounds
not.
Terrible.
She's not.
I have a couple of therapists.
That's why we're looking at the Fraser Center.
I also have a couple, and maybe I can get offline your connection with you, because I also know a couple specialists that are in your neighborhood that would be able to work in that direction,
sure.
And I hope that's okay. But what I'm understanding is, once you guys get the right connection, Fraser is awesome. They're going to be able to sit down with you and her, and you guys together to communicate. I know how difficult it is, but one thing I would suggest sometimes is, because they get so angry, is write it down.
Okay.
Write a journal.
Do you read that? Kind of go over that.
Sometimes
with him,
we used to do that with my son, and what we would do is, I would write him things in the evening, and he would write me things. I would find positive. I'd start it with a positive, kind of do the corrected, and then end it with a positive. But I found too is, when he couldn't get things off his mind fast enough, he'd write it down, and then we would talk about it.
Yep. All right. So, Elisa, we'll put stay on hold there, and we'll make sure that we get your information. Carissa will get to that here shortly, and we'll give you an opportunity to maybe make a connection with Mary after the show, and maybe there's some resources that can help you with that. We're talking today autism, other neurobiological diagnoses, and Mary Wangren is joining us today. She's an advocate for families that are dealing with that, having experienced it herself. And she volunteers at her church and in scouting, and as a support group leader. And we're taking your calls today at 877-93-FAITH. It's 877-933-2484. We want to take a short little break, and then we'll come back and get more calls. So thank you for your calls, and we'll get to you as quickly as can. Appreciate your involvement. We also have some copies of a book from Dr. Daniel Amen to give away. We'll do a drawing for that at the end of the show. 877-93-FAITH. It's 32 past the hour, and we're talking today with Mary Wangren back in the studio. Mary has a degree in mammalogy. No, she also has a degree in biology, but she has, as a mother of two adult children now who have had some neurobiological diagnosis, she has become an advocate for other families in that same situation, a support group leader, businesswoman, and wife. And so we're talking today about ADD, about autism, and more. And we're going to try and get to your calls as often, as much as we can. But I wanted to follow up Elisa's call about her 13-year-old. Mary, you've had your kids have, gone through anger and door slamming and, holes in the door. So any other advice, things that you might mention to Elisa or others that are facing that?
I know it's easy to say when you're done going through it, but separating, even if it's a matter of, you take a time out, they take a time out. The door kicking, I totally understand. But if there's a cool down period, and I mean physically, if mom goes on a walk or dad that goes on a walk, go a walk around the house. Now, that can be scary because the child's going to probably think that you're going to go and not come back. And so you can just say, just like I do even with my daughter on the phone, I'll say, Josie, I can't talk with you right now. I can't talk with you when you're like this, and I will talk to you as soon as you calm down. So you call me back or I'll call you back. Click. And I think you even need to do that in the house. Another thing, I've had parents who've told me they've taken doors off because of the door slammers. And I know that when it's all done, but I really highly recommend is finding a psychologist, somebody who knows how to deal with these, because I also think of oppositional defiance with the anger and the temper and stuff. But a lot of it comes out sideways because you're dealing with hormones. And that's the problem is this just a teenage daughter? Is a teenage daughter with a diagnosis? Oh my gosh, is the medicine okay? Or it's at the end of the day and everybody's tired? That's the hardest piece is trying to analyze. But getting a therapist for mom and dad and for the daughter and even working, because I totally understand the financial piece of it, working together, sometimes the doctors will allow or the therapist will allow a parent to sit on the session where they can all discuss things together.
Yeah, might be helpful there.
Right. Yeah.
Well, let's take some more calls. Patricia is listening in to the Twin Cities and has a question about school-related. Patricia, you're on with Mary Wangren. Go ahead.
Hi, Mary. I can identify with a lot of what's been said here. I have a daughter who is 16. She's ninth grade. She started school late because even her preschool, before she took her pre-kindergarten, they said there's issues here. Looking at her, she's beautiful. She looks like a cheerleader. She's a cheerleader. she's a beautiful girl, but she has ADD, dyslexia, and processing issues. Her dad's dyslexic. I have the ADD processing issues. My concern is we've had her in private school throughout growing up and whatnot. We didn't want to go down the public school route. We still have her in a private school, and my frustration is with the accommodations that they don't have. Mm-hmm. I'm frustrated. These are our children. These children, in Jesus' eyes, are as worthy as any other child out there. I guess my question is, I want to know how I can get this child to graduate. Do I have to go down the public school system? I cannot homeschool because of the issues you just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
We don't work together well.
Okay.
I totally understand with what you're asking. First of all, let me ask you something. She's got these diagnoses. Does she have an IEP, an individual education plan, at the private school?
Yes and no. They have a 504 plan.
Okay.
They have a learning specialist at the school.
Uh-huh.
And we are, I just got her a live scribe pen. Don't know if you know about those, but those are awesome. It's a pen you write down while the lecture is going, the teacher showing the math problem or whatever. And whatever you're writing in that book goes into the notebook. And when you go back that night to get it, all you have to do is put your pen wherever that note is, open it up, and it goes right to the lecture.
So that's fantastic. Nice. Oh,
yes,
that sounds fabulous.
So,
okay, so when you're looking at She has a 504. They have a learning specialist. Have you talked to them about an IEP? The difference between a 504 and an IEP is the IEP is legal. It's a document that the school has to make the accommodations. There's no messing around.
It's called what, an individual education?
An individual education plan,
okay.
Yes.
All right.
And whereas a 504 is an accommodation plan, is that kind of what your daughter have you talked to the school about an IEP?
I have, but they are private, and private schools don't have to do that by law.
Okay, okay. Okay, so we've got the 504, and you've got the learning. What kind of accommodations are they working on for her? Because, you know, it's funny, because most people, this sounds, maybe you've heard this, a lot of people will put their children in a private school because the classrooms are smaller, because they think they're going to get more individualized attention. But is what's happening now is she is maybe not getting that stuff? Is she kind of getting a label? I hate to ask that question.
Oh, she's got the label. She's had it since kindergarten.
Yeah, okay. Yep. Sometimes, I don't know, because this is up to you, but depending on where you live and what the schools have to offer, I hate to say it, but sometimes getting into a public school is because they do have state funding. They do have funding that would be able to – they have social workers and somebody who can sit down and identify with your daughter. And if there's – they can accommodate a lot more than private schools because they have the funding.
Yeah. Say a word about, I mean, we use the word accommodation. I mean, that means a lot of things, I guess, in the whole spectrum.
Well, a good an example of accommodation is, like she talked about her pen, her daughter having this pen. Sometimes they also have what they call Alpha Smart. My son used to use one of those where the kids have these keyboards, and they would type everything in there. And then when they get home, they would put like a USB to their computer,
sure.
And it would download everything that they had. Because he was not good at writing. He couldn't, you know. Another accommodation would be the ability of a child to be able to get up and self-time out, maybe go out in the hallway. Let's say there's just too much going on in the classroom. There's a lot of activity, and it's just not a conducive environment for a child who gets distracted. So they would be able to get up and walk out or get up and go to a different part of the classroom. It would be able to some kids – my son had this in his IEP. He could doodle. There were teachers who didn't want their kids to. They always wanted the eye contact, look forward. He could not. For kids with diagnosis, it's very difficult for them to look straight ahead and watch the teacher. It's almost distracting because while they're looking at the teacher, they see the flag, they see the, you know, all these other things. He literally had the ability to doodle in his IEP because when these kids, they think and they receive information differently, they can be doing something with their hands and totally be being focused on what's being said. And if you ask them, maybe they're not looking at you and maybe they look like they're completely in a different area with their mind, you can ask them and they can repeat verbatim what was just said.
So, yeah, just to be willing to. I mean, again,
I would have her look. I would have her, and if this is something, I would seriously have her consider contacting the school in the area. There are different organizations like Fraser and different people that she can call for resources, and she can find out what they would have to help accommodate her daughter. The reputation thing is huge with these kids, and we did this for my son when he was in sixth grade. We literally switched entire school districts. So he had a clean slate, and we started a whole new process when we went to the schools, dealt with schools completely different. Sometimes a clean slate is the most effective way.
And as Patricia said, she wants her child to graduate, you know,
yes.
and give them every opportunity. So do they make friends easily?
No, that's the saddest part. Because of the way they act, their peers do not appreciate anything that these kids usually do. It usually takes a one-on-one for these kids to start understanding each other. But I would have to say no. Usually the kids that are older, they look at any child that's younger as being immature. So the kids that are older, they get along really well with kids with diagnosis. Kids that are younger look up to a child, an older child with a diagnosis, because they're just older and that's cool. But dealing with their peers, it's not a very happy situation. You can try play dates. You can try friends getting together. But what ends up happening is these diagnosed kids – have a hard time with their own space, let alone somebody else's spaces. They also like to talk about things that they are only interested in. And you'll find even my son's best friend could not stand him when they first were friends because my son wanted to talk about games all the time. But when Jack needed help with a particular game, he befriended George. Then suddenly they found out that they have a lot in common. It's funny. They just went to an anime. They do a lot of these animation conventions that are going on. And I said to George, he was telling me how much fun he enjoyed this one over the 18th, the weekend of the 18th. And I said, George, why do you think you had so much fun? He goes, because Jack and I weren't around any electronics and we had to communicate with one another and it was really a good time.
Interesting. Okay. Let's take another call. This is Cindy, who's listening in Crystal. Relationship to PS, post-traumatic stress. Cindy, go ahead. You're on with Mary Wangren.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call, Mary.
Cindy.
Hi. I was just wondering, a neighbor kid, his brother had cerebral palsy really bad, and this boy was a beautiful boy, and he was totally autistic, and he never spoke, and he was about 10, 11, and it just seemed like, and my son also had problems with ADHD, and he was raised by his dad, and then when he lost his mom, when he lost his mom, I believe he went into post-traumatic stress disorder really severely, quite severely, and I saw the son of the neighbor boy looking the neighbor boy and his looking at his brother with the cerebral palsy, and I know there's a physical connection too, you know, which is probably like nutritional maybe a little is what I'm assuming, but my son almost became like catatonic.
Mm-hmm.
For a while, when I would visit with him, I didn't hear him speak for a long time, and I knew that he was severely affected by losing his mother at a young age, like 2.5, because we had such a great bond. And I really think there's some kind of a connection there with some of these. Do you think there's any studies
I don't know. I haven't heard of any studies, but I'll tell you one thing is hearing about it, one thing about these kids, like I had talked about a little bit earlier, is routine is really huge. And so not having the routine of having a mother, but also the fact that they look to the safe people in their lives. Even my son at 23 will get very frustrated or concerned if he doesn't understand that I'm not going to be somewhere. He gets very upset. Now, today he went to the dentist for the first time, and he did call me, which was great, but he was doing really well. And I really truly believe that just not having that relationship, and it that could have a big effect. But I don't know. I really don't know about I would think that post-dramatic – or the I would think that it had a – yeah.
Well, I mean, any trauma.
Any trauma is huge.
In a child, no matter what.
Lot of times these kids need to understand why. You need to understand why. And sometimes, even if it's this many years, I don't know how old did she say your son is, 11, sitting down and talking to him, and it may be really difficult, but explain why mommy did this or, you know, why mom went away and having a discussion. Because for them, understanding is the most important thing. Hmm. And it may be difficult, but I would, you know, say that would be a huge piece.
All right. We're going to get to some more calls in just a moment. We'll take another break here. You're listening to Connecting Faith. Mary Wangren is my guest today in studio. A businesswoman, a wife, support group leader, advocate on behalf of families and with children diagnosed with autism or other neurobiological diagnosis. She's a dedicated volunteer at her church in scouting and has a degree in momology. And we just love chatting with her and taking your calls, and we'll get to a couple more here in just a moment. Stay tuned. It's 48 past the hour, talking today about autism, ADD, neurobiological diagnosis, NBDs. Mary Wangren is my guest today. We've had her on in the past, an advocate on behalf of families and children with this diagnosis. And so we're just kind of fielding some of your questions. And Natalie is listening in and calling in from White Bear Lake. Natalie, you're on with the Mary. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I identify with what you're saying, Mary, and then all of the other callers as well. My daughter has Asperger's, and she was diagnosed relatively young, probably 6 years old, and she has undergone treatment at a therapy place that specifically works with children with Asperger's, autism spectrum, and the results that we've seen in emotional regulation and body regulation has been huge. So for your first caller who was interested in Fraser, I would recommend that highly. And then the second caller, you know, we did have her in private school as well, and we had to make the choice based on the absence of an IEP in the private school to go to public school.
But listen to you. You go, girl.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
And you had
thank
a question,
you.
Too, right, about time management?
I did. So the time management, that is our biggest issue right now. Mm-hmm. So when you were talking about your son and then when you asked him to hurry, he would go slower. And just doing daily tasks such as getting up, getting dressed, coming down for breakfast, she gets very distracted.
Mm-hmm.
And when we ask to hurry, it's either this frantic, and I don't want her to live in this frantic state.
Right.
Or it's really slow.
Oh, my gosh. I know.
If you have any...
I've even said to George, what if the house was on fire?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. You know, you ask a really good question. And a couple things that that we have found helpful is, and maybe you know this, but it's good to share with everybody, is you can't spring, we're going to go. I always have to use the clock and say we're leaving in 15 minutes, we're leaving in 5 minutes, we're leaving in 3 minutes. When George, I learned this at a younger age. I don't know, how old is your daughter?
She's eight.
Okay, eight years old. This is perfect.
Right.
What I start to do at about this age was I would time him on everything. I'm serious, even his homework. I think that's what helped him when he does tests because I used to time him even doing his math assignments. I do that now. Today I'll say to him, when I left today, I said, George, before I get home, I want you to do, you know, ABC. And he'll say to me, what time are you going to be home, Mom? And I'll say, I get off at 5. I'm hoping he's going to have it done before 5. But I give him time. George, I'd like to have this done like on a Saturday. George, I would like you to bring up XYZ from the laundry room, and I'd like it done before 11:15. And I give him these times. I used to put the timer on, especially before he understood the sense of time and analog. You know, we can look at the digital on our computer, on our stove, on our microwave. But what I used to do is I would set the timer. So he knew that, okay, I'm giving you 5 minutes, and when the timer goes off, that's it. And I found that that helped his time management because he knew he only had a certain amount of time, and he had it until the timer went off. It would be a reward system a lot of times until we got to it. Another thing that I love, and it sounds really crazy, guys, but we as adults, we go into meetings, and what's the first thing we anticipate when we go into a meeting? An agenda. What are we going to talk about? Who's going to be here? How long is it going to take? Well, I feel that kids deserve that. And sometimes it's nice when a parent, and I used to do this when the kids were little, I used to take the big 5x7 cards.
Yeah.
And I used to put down literally times that I anticipated the kids to do certain things. Now, it sounds really structured, but what would happen is the kids would know what was expected at what time. And then what I would do is my daughter to this day does not know analog. That's for those of you out there that are younger. It's the one with the fingers on the watch. But I would literally put a digital clock right there, and they could look at the clock, look at what they had to have done, and they knew what was going on. I know it sounds crazy, yeah, but it gives them the structure that they thrive on. And I'll tell you, what it does is it takes that emotional piece as a parent off of you, and it puts it on the paper. And so then what you can say is, hey, what does the paper say? Rather than, Mom says, do this. you know, and it worked for us. It really did.
All right, I hope that can help, Natalie, a little bit. Matt is listening in Fergus Falls. Matt, you're on with Mary Wangren. Go ahead with your call.
Hi, Matt.
Hi. Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, you know, I'm not going to lie and say that it's going great, but life is life and keeps going on. But I just happened to be on lunch and listening to your program, and I guess I can readily identify as far as like the ADHD, and I know you've had a lot of parents on and you've kind of been gathering that perspective, but at the same time, I agree with a lot of what you say as far, and it's very well said, but as far as being on the receiving end of that, mm-hmm. like what it feels for that child.
Yeah. Can you give us a perspective on that, Matt?
Yeah, I was diagnosed with ADHD in 10th grade, and I tried, I don't even know if it was Ritalin or Adderall or different things, and I know I haven't made my parents' life the easiest, and I mean, it's been frustrating for them, but I think the biggest thing for me was two things. One, what other people would think, and just the shame and embarrassment and guilt for not being able to live up to other people's standards or things of that nature, I guess. And the other, just the frustration that you have at yourself because you're not what you would consider normal. Like a lot of it makes, when you're diagnosed with, whether it's ADHD or autism or whatnot, it makes you feel ostracized. It makes you feel alone. And it's very hard to deal with, but it's a very common and prevalent problem, obviously, today.
Absolutely. I think that you've really brought out some really good things. That's one reason I got into this game is those that know me know that I love to talk. I was told that God gave me my voice because I know how I too felt that when my kids were diagnosed and I wanted to share with somebody, I was very embarrassed. And I know that frustration that you're feeling about what you would consider quote unquote normal, or what I would consider, you're not neurotypical, is that's why I started speaking, because a lot of people are feeling this way. First of all, you only have one person's standards, and that's God's. You know what? He is the only one that really cares about really what's happening in your life. He and your parents, of course, don't get me wrong. But like I always tell the kids, you have numero uno best friend in the world, and that's Jesus Christ. And he's always there no matter what happens. And those are the standards of your family and yourself, and to heck what everybody else is looking at. Because you know what I found out? When you get behind those perfect family doors, you find out that their house is just as messy as your own. But it's easier said than done. Trust me, I know, because I know what it's like to sit at church. I once talked to our pastor about it. She was talking about why do families that have kids with diagnosis don't attend church? And I said, it's not that they don't want to attend church. They're afraid of the people that are going to turn around and point or sneer or make comments. And you know what? You know what? It's the guy upstairs that only cares about the noise. And one Sunday she spoke about it, and it was very interesting because we are starting to be a very embracing community at our church. Second of all, the frustrations, absolutely. But you also have to realize everybody, and I'm still teaching this to my daughter, not my son, because I believe that God gives you guys, everybody that has a diagnosis, God gives you guys a strength that gets you up every day and gets you going. And you just got to realize that your frustrations are for what they are, and somebody else's who seems like they have no frustrations, they do. They're just not telling you.
Yeah.
And I'm being cut off.
No,
see, I love to talk.
I know the time is getting away from us. We were just, before we started the show, we're talking about maybe a website, and you mentioned Chad. Is that the best one maybe to go to? Or?
I think Chad for ADD. That's child and adults with ADD, ADHD. That is an awesome site. They are the most leader. There is some awesome websites also that are for autism. And but one of them is, ADDResources.net, Attention Deficit Disorder Association, which is ADD.org, the CHADD, CHADD.org, and then helpforADD.org.
Okay.
And then the only other thing that I was going to say is Fraser's a fabulous resource. We've been talking about him.
Good. We'll link some of those up on our website so that people can go there for more resources.
Thanks, Neil. This has been a ball. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for calling in.
Mary Wangren joining us today as we talked about, children diagnosed with autism or other neurobiological diagnoses. Thank you for your calls and your comments today. And if you missed part of today's program and want to just listen to a portion of it again or pass it on to a friend, you can do that. Everything's shareable on our website. So you go to myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page, and you can catch the podcast there and then share it with a friend as well. Thank you for listening.